Okay. Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, this is Highway Diary episode 284. With me for the second time, my new best friend from Denver, Colorado, Charlie Robinson.
Hello. How are you?
Good, buddy. I tried to give you a present. You know, you're a humble guy.
I know, but I haven't ever done that.
All right. Well, you know, don't be afraid of the barber just because you're bald. I've been there. They shave my head. They clean my beard up. You know, I'll send you to the barber. Make yourself look beautiful. That's how much I love Charlie Robinson.
I appreciate that. I thought I was going to confuse the barber. They were going to be like, what are you in here for? Where's your hair?
No, I've done it before. I know it's tough for bald guys like us, but you just walk up to them and go, you know, shave me down, you know?
There's a lot of flexibility in their, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Maybe they give you a little cut, right? But they're not going to give you a bad haircut.
Yeah, God already did that to us. Yes. Speaking of bald guys, I want to talk about this guy called Ben Bernanke. He used to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And, you know, while Congress is arguing about 600 stimulus check, 1,200 stimulus check, you know, let's just set the population with no money for 9 months and see what they do, you know. Ben Bernanke said one time where money comes from.
Is that tax money that the Fed is spending?
It's not tax money. The banks have accounts with the Fed, much the same way that you have an account in a commercial bank. So to lend to a bank, we simply use the computer to mark up the size of the account that they have with the Fed. So it's much more akin, although not exactly the same, but it's much more akin to printing money than it is to borrowing.
Huh.
Interesting. You mean it's much like printing money. You mean it is printing money.
But just it's between the banks. Like no, I put more money in your computer bank. Now go subjugate.
Right. This is what's frustrating. Because even when they tell you what they're doing, there is a huge segment of the population that will look at you like you're crazy for telling them the words that these people are saying. I'm not saying that they're just printing money and, you know, like a printing press. They're saying it. I'm just saying what they're saying. You know, it's still infuriating to me when I have conversations with people about stuff like this. In fact, that's the reason why my octopus book came to be, because if I'm going to have a discussion with somebody about something like this and, you know, I'll say, well, you know, don't take my word for it. They're the ones saying it. They'll say, oh, get out of here. They didn't say that. That's why I wrote the book the way I did, where I put the quotes in. I put it in writing. This is what they said. So something like Ben Bernanke saying that, though I don't think I put that in the book. I should have. That's a good one. It's like, don't take my word for it. Take their word for it. They're the ones saying this. When I start saying, oh, you know, the New World Order, this or that, people go, get out of here. You stop making that stuff up. It's like, would you like me to show you 200 examples of George H.W. Bush talking about the New World Order on camera during his only 4 years in office? Like, I can put together a compilation of that because it happened. So it's frustrating when you know, if you're going to go out and you're at a bar and you say something like, well, the Fed just prints money out of thin air. And someone goes, no, you know, that's not how it works, man. You go, listen, I get the head of the Federal Reserve telling you on camera that's how it works.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
For 60 minutes, money. Yeah. If you didn't catch that episode of 60 Minutes, you wouldn't have saw that. And then, you know, what is poverty? All these guys, you know, they like to say it's free market capitalism. They like to say it's, you know, you work hard, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But these guys are at a level where they just go, oh, hey, Tony, yeah, I need $1.5 trillion because some of my mortgages went. Oh, and by the way, yeah, we should up the rates to cover our overhead in case this happens again. So now mortgages, you know, are going to be 9.4% a year. Oh, by the way, thanks, Ben Bernanke, for the free money that you just wired me.
call him Helicopter Ben, because one time he said that they, what they could do is take money and throw it out of helicopters. Now, he was kind of joking, but he was kind of not, too. And that's why he got the name, and why it stuck, was because you know that in his head, he has fantasies, you know, he thinks, no, in his scenario, he's got a helicopter filled with cash that he's dumping on Wall Street, to be clear, not Main Street. He's not talking about actually doing that.
No, he's
but his
more...
nickname's Helicopter Ben for a reason. I mean, this guy is part of the problem.
But
banking's boring, and nobody cares, and guys like that wear suits, and they don't make outrageous comments normally, and so they fly under the radar, and people treat the media treats these people like they're heroes. You know, Andrea Mitchell from NBC News is married to Alan Greenspan. So, like, there's even a dirty relationship between the Federal Reserve and the media, too. I mean, the media is dirty. Anything that it touches, it makes dirty as well. But this relationship between the banks or Wall Street and the media is very important to them, to keep this scam going, to keep people from figuring this out. That's the reason why it's not taught in school. They don't want you to understand how this stuff works. If you understood how it worked, you'd be able to see through it in 2 seconds, that it's a gigantic Ponzi scheme. But they don't want you to know that, so they don't teach it. And then they treat these people like they're heroes. Ben Bernanke and Alan Greenspan and Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell, these people don't like you. They hate your guts. It's in their interest and in their charter to make it so that there are the haves and the have-nots. These people could technically end poverty overnight if they wanted to. They don't want to.
Yeah.
It's not in their interest to do anything remotely like that. So it's not. It's like, oh, you could just print up money and end homelessness. Yeah, of course you could. I mean, you would devalue the currency, but you technically could do it. But you know, they don't want to do that.
There's in Jersey, like, I always drive by these big empty warehouses, like, you know, for that used to be a textile industry or whatever. I mean, the buildings there, it wouldn't be that much to make homeless dorms out of these abandoned warehouses. You know, you're a real estate guy, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course.
They just print the money and then, you know, pay for the free labor. You know, they just don't want to organize it like this.
No. They want society organized in a much different way, in a way that it doesn't benefit the many. And look, a case can be made that there are a lot of people standing around waiting for a handout. But that is not limited to just individuals. Banks and corporations are standing around waiting for a handout, too. Whole industries are. Airline industry, travel industry, cruise ship industry. They're all like, give me money. Give me money. Now, they have a chance to maybe get it, whereas... because they can say, well, without us, you know, we're responsible for all these jobs, and you got to give us money because, if you know, it has a cascading effect where if we go down, then we take all these other industries with us. And so it's like what Hank Paulson talked about in 2008, you know, you better give us $700 billion or there'll be martial law in the streets. And he was only kind of half lying about that. So, yeah, the bankers are dangerous, and they get cover because they seem like boring dudes, but they're some of the most dangerous people on the planet.
Mm. I sent you a meme on the Skype, and I think I texted it to you, too. You know, what is the difference between tattooing Jews on coming to Auschwitz work camp, right? So they all got tattooed. And then we're starved and forced to, you know, make bullets for the German army or make boots for the German army as they lived in this work camp, right? So what's the difference if you get a tattoo to identify you to your Auschwitz overlords to go, oh, you're 06841, you should be making socks over there in building 2. So they were controlled in this way. They were only allowed in certain buildings on the work camp. What's different between that and getting an RFID chip? And I want to speak, you know, RFID chips, if you think this is crazy, a lot of vets recommend them to put them in your pet, that you'll put one in your dog as a tracking device. Oh no, you know, Fluffy is lost in the woods, but if he comes across a city official, they'll chip him. And then it's like, oh, well, what if my kid goes lost? You know, the RFID chip will find my kid. It's a good thing. But it's kind of like an Auschwitz tattoo, right?
The major difference is perception. That it's perceived as some sort, like with the chips for the animals, that's been around for a while, and it's like, you know, if your cat gets out and you can't find it, and someone finds a cat and takes it to a vet across town that's not your vet, they can scan the chip, you can claim your, you know, they'll call you and say, hey, we found your cat at this vet, and happy story, right? And theoretically, like you said, that could happen with kids, too. I mean, we'll skip the part that the largest trafficker of kids is the Child Protective Services, but that's beside the point. You know, so theoretically, you'd be able to track people. But this is just the digital. I mean, listen, if the Germans could have used RFID chips, they would have used those. It's just what technology do you have available to you at the time? Now, they used a heavy-handed approach, which turned people into cattle so that they could be, you know, classified and categorized easier based on their tattoos. But like you said, there's no difference between that, just be happening on a digital level, you know. Yeah. Faster, more effectively, and maybe it doesn't overtly show. I mean, look, if you voluntarily sign up for that, you are an idiot of epic proportions. You know, if you go and say, yes, put this chip in me, you're out of your mind. But that's not my fear, though. My fear is them covertly putting this into people, or you know, I've already been disappointed with how assimilated everybody got with the mask situation so quickly and so comfortably. So comfortably that they don't have a problem yelling at strangers, telling them to put on masks, which is, you know, asking to get a knuckle sandwich, frankly. But we've seen how that's happened just with masks. If they can convince you that having this implantable device is for your best interest, or let me rephrase that, if they can convince you that having this implantable device is for everybody else's best interest, then it will get adopted, because you'll have a group of brain dead robotic Karens out there that will work as the enforcement agency for the government, or whoever is proposing this, government / big pharma / the military, Operation Warp Speed, basically. You'd let the, you know, in this scenario, you tell them it's for the greater good, and then just let the public shaming do the rest. You know, it's a very devious way of doing it. Of course, it's, you know, when you point that out, though, that'll get you thrown off of Twitter.
Yeah, I know. And I've been getting a lot of pushback on social media, and we could talk about that later. But yeah, you just reminded me, right? So we need to get the public to get shipped. So let's start it with their dogs, and then, but it is kind of like a ring on a cow's ear that shows that it's you know, from a certain ranch. It is kind of like showing overtly our corporate ownership over our beasts of burden. But so we need someone. We need a right pitch man. Oh, I know. Let's call Santa Klaus Schwab.
The COVID-19 crisis has shown us that our old systems are not fit anymore for the 21st century. It has laid bare the fundamental lack of social cohesion, fairness, inclusion, and equality. In short, we need a great reset.
A great reset. I saw a commercial for the Great Reset, and it says on text on the screen, you will own nothing, and you will be happy. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the marketing?
So I have a marketing degree from the University of Southern California, so I am uniquely qualified to answer this question. Maybe when you're rolling out the dystopian, nightmarish future, maybe don't have a German guy announce it? I don't know. Just a thought. Maybe don't dress him up like Emperor Palpatine at the same time as well while you're rolling out. I mean, it's so cartoonish and insane that you would laugh if it wasn't so goddamn serious.
Okay, wait.
What these people are proposing is a dystopian, nightmarish future.
Look,
and it's dressed
Charlie,
up
Charlie, I know,
in
but
the sales pitch.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to join it.
Go ahead.
I'm going to join, you know, because I got a screenwriting degree. I can't, you know, I can't sell scripts. You know, Hollywood is dying. So yeah. I'm going to sell this script to Davos. Okay, so this is my speech I've prepared for Klaus Schwab. Please. When he takes over everybody and ships everybody, this is his pitch. Ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
I own it. Do you know I own it? I own everything. The car in your driveway. The wedding ring on your finger. I own it. The underwear covering your schmeckle. The Wiener Schnitzel you are consuming and is now lodged in your esophagus. I own it. The Wiener Schnitzel becomes your shit. I own that. The spunking from your phallus entering your wife. The fetus incubating in her stomach, I own it. When it births into my new world order, I will put a chip in your babies to calculate my worth, the worth of my ownership. I will listen to their pulse via an RFID chip. I will gather their poopies and measure it so I know what they have digested of my world that I own. I will get rich to speculate on their labor. And then when this financial bubble bursts, I will have the kill switch. I am Klaus Schwab. Email me at Davos. Thank you. What do you think?
Klaus at, at worldwef.org. Hashtag blessed.
So you think I could sell this script to Davos?
Listen, it's as realistic of a speech as the ones he's been giving. You know, it's as insane and disjoint. I mean, these people are, they're very, you know, they're very serious about this. They have put powerful and connected people in places. You know, they have partnered with a variety of industries. I mean, they have the ability to make this happen. But it does require one thing. It requires a gullible and dumbed down and desperate public. And they're working on the desperate part right now by destroying the current paradigm, destroying everything that we have been used to our lives, and by just, you know, small and medium-sized business going away and making people stand and, you know, 5-6 feet away from each other, or eating dinners outside in pods or igloos that are, you know, because you can't be inside because you're going to die from this. They're already pepper bombing us in creating an unsustainable reality where we can't live like this much longer. And they're going to then offer this transition. Well, you don't like what we've currently got, and there's a lot of problems with what we've currently got, right? And you're nodding yes, because it's true, we do have a lot of problems and we don't like where we are. Well, listen, we've got this new offer over here, this great reset, which is self-driving cars and Internet of Things and smart cities and you know, yes, micro apartments, but you're going to be happy because you don't want the burden of having all this stuff, right? And we'll make it so that you know everything is easier. Oh, and everything is green, of course, because we have to be green. We have to take care of the environment. And so the sales pitch is going to be great. But, you know, I assume the sales pitch of communism was great too. You know, I saw the paintings, you know, like, hey, we're out working in the field in this sunlight, and we're cutting down, we're in the wheat fields, you know, we're all working, we're all in this together. That's not how it plays out. Communism is awful as well. So this is a sales pitch for going back to like feudal times with like the kings and the serfs. And frankly, if the vast majority of people can't see this, then I kind of feel like, then go, then dummies, you know, then Mark. But the problem with doing that is that, of course, you get to a critical mass of people that have gone along with it, and then you're trapped in this system, you know. So I would prefer that everybody wake up to this, and you know, who knows, maybe the over the top German accent and the dressed like a supervillain outfit might wake up people to the fact that, oh, Jesus, I mean, the person in charge of this is straight out of the movies. And, you know, if there's one thing we have learned after 20 years of being programmed with these, like, supervillain movies is that, you know, you've got to fight the villain. So at some point we're going to have to face Klaus Schwab in the third act of this play with swords or something. You know, I think that's how it always goes down, isn't it? You're a screenwriter. You tell me how it all ends.
Well, you know, when you first said Emperor Palpatine outfit in the last time we talked, I didn't know what you were talking about. So I went to Google Images and I typed in Klaus Schwab, and you're right. He is wearing this Star Trek uniform, and he got this whole, you know, photo shoot of him in this ridiculous outfit, and then he's like, I will own everything, and it's like, are you joking?
You look like an asshole, Klaus. Let's just be Klaus. Let's stop.
What's heartbreaking?
Take this ridiculous costume off. That you're embarrassing yourself.
Ugh. But what's heartbreaking to me is, you know, we had Thanksgiving. I submitted a COVID test for that to my family member, and then this year it was canceled because the Christmas was canceled 2020 because, you know, the cases were rising. And now, you know, one family member wants to see her grandbabies and is all about getting the vaccine so she can see her grandbabies, you know, because we've had, you know, Christmas canceled, which is tough for, you know, older folk. And, you know, I don't want to name names here, but, then I get informed sometimes on Sam Tripoli's podcast, and Dr. Rashid Buttar came on, a doctor, and he said this.
They're just doing it to cull humans. That's what it appears. They're going to forgive everybody their debts. The report that I got was they're going to have a world debt forgiveness program. And in order to participate in this world debt forgiveness program, there are a couple of criteria. Now, I've actually heard about this world debt forgiveness program for the last year. I've been hearing people talk about it in social circles. People talk about how it's going to be great, it'll be this, it's going to be that. But you know, if you tell a child in a classroom, child A something, you whisper in the ear, and then A tells B something, by the time it gets to C, it's a totally different story. So this world debt forgiveness program that's going to be funded by the World Monetary Fund, I guess, is supposed to be a good thing, and they're going to paint it as if it's a good thing. But the stipulations that come along with it are very draconian. One, you have to give up all your property, whatever you own, and agree not to own anything in the future. You're basically selling your soul to the devil. You also have to agree and comply with all the COVID-19 restrictions and get the vaccine. And essentially, you have to agree to become a drone and or a zombie or whatever you want to call it, and all your debt will be forgiven. So it reminds me of when Ben Franklin's quote, those who are willing to exchange a little bit of safety for their freedoms deserve neither. So coming back to these draconian measures, people are going to, it was a question during the meeting, well, what if somebody doesn't comply? And the answer was, it is your job as members of parliament, it is your jobs as the politicians to make sure that your constituents comply. And it was put.
Yeah. We just need a guy to market this.
This is dangerous. You know, this is dangerous because what you see here is you have some very, very smart people with access to the media and a devious agenda that have set their sights on some very dumb people and unthinking. You know, it's a combination of just physically low IQ people, low horsepower, you know, there's that. Then there are the people that are too busy to dig into any of the research and just get their news real quickly from mainstream media and think they're informed. There's that batch of people. Then there's the people that would never believe, can never believe, that science can be hijacked for nefarious purposes. Those people are in this group. There's a lot of people that will sign up for this. There's a lot of people that you know, that there's a saying that mice fall into they get stuck in the mousetrap because they can't figure out why the cheese is free. And this is a mousetrap. The cheese is wiping away your debts. The mice are all of these people that I just mentioned, and they're going to get stuck in that mousetrap, and they're not going to be able to figure it out because they're too dumb, or they're too trusting, or they're too chemically, you know, altered, or they're too patriotic and blind to the fact that what their government really is, or they're too devoted to Big Pharma, and they have a different relationship with Big Pharma than you or I do. You know, so there's a, or they're bad at math, and they can't figure this out, or they don't understand how debt works, or any, there's a number of reasons. And my fear is not early on these people, because these people, it's like, I've changed my tune. Like, if you want to get the, you know, I'll invest the time and talk to someone. If someone has a question with me, a question for me about the vaccine thing, I'll explain it as best I can. But if someone just wants to argue with me and tell me that I'm stupid for saying that Big Pharma has a credibility problem, well, then I feel like just let those people go. Go, you be the first in line then, dummy. Put your money where you're first in line for the shot. And with this transformation of society that they're talking about, give up everything and you'll own nothing. Unless you're becoming a Buddhist monk, this is a really bad idea. And even if you're becoming a Buddhist monk, I mean, you have to sort of think this whole thing out. At least with the Buddhist monk scenario, Klaus Schwab's not in charge of it. You know.
Yeah. The writing on the wall for me is a lot of doctors. You know, I got a master in screenwriting. The only thing I'm good at is following the story of things. And when I'm watching a bunch of doctors that have a different idea of how to deal with the pandemic, a lot of Harvard, Yale doctors, like I saw this press conference, only Ivy League doctors were talking. And they, in this press conference, I don't have this clip, but to sum it up, they were like, what we should do is keep the economy open and develop a herd immunity the natural way by letting everybody basically make out with each other and continue as business as usual. Everyone will get a version of this, and then we'll fight it off like with therapeutics, and the statistics now are fine to do with that. And, you know, then they're all blocked and banned from Twitter. Now, mm-hmm. You have a big tech firm with, you know, bachelor communications degrees, and they're going through shadow banning doctors with proper PhDs from Ivy League schools. Now, we have a problem here that's shocking. When Dr. Rashid Buttar comes on, and he, Sam Tripoli's podcast, and he's a doctor, and he's like, I was in a meeting, they're trying to kill everybody with this vaccine, and, you know, but this is what they're going to get. They're going to get their debt wiped out, and, you know, okay, so this is the super bad guy meeting I accidentally walked into. The other guy I really like to pay attention to, you know, everyone's getting a PCR test. Everyone's getting a PCR test to see if they have COVID-19. The PCR test, the greatest test in the world. The most must have been a smart guy who invented it. It's Dr. Mullis, Dr. Carey Mullis. And this is what Dr. Carey Mullis has said.
Guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine. He should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on the bottom. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people who pay his salary and lie directly into the camera.
That's what Carey Mullis said about Tony Fauci.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
they
after,
know who he is.
After Carey dies, they steal his invention and then use it against everything he stood for.
Sounds about right. Yeah, that's. I had David Icke on my show, and we were talking about this. And you know, this is it's very dangerous, like you said, to let these unelected tech people. Well, even if they're elected, frankly, I don't care about the elected part. But these tech oligarchs make the decisions on which doctors' voices are amplified and which ones are suppressed. Now, that's not their decision to make. And they may be making the decision, but the directive is coming from on high, coming down to them from the Atlantic Council. And this is a very dangerous group. This is the military. The Atlantic Council is NATO. It's NATO's public-facing arm, their NGO. And the Atlantic Council is a group of tech people and military and government and big pharma and all these, it's this group. It's the group that, it's a parallel group to like the World Economic Forum, and there's overlapping members, of course. It's like a Venn diagram where you have interlocking circles where you can be a member of the Atlantic Council, you can be a member of Council on Foreign Relations, you can be a member of World Economic Forum. You could be in one of those, you could be in all three of them if you're powerful enough. So these are the groups that are telling social media who to get rid of. And you have to do that when your social media, when your seed funding comes from the CIA's venture capital arm in Qtel, like Google's had, like Google's money came from, like Facebook's money came from. I don't know about Twitter. I have to check on that. But I'm sure they have, if not direct connections to in Qtel, they have connections to Sequoia or Kleiner Perkins or some of the venture capital firms that have relationships with the CIA. These technologies, these Facebooks, and these are CIA-developed applications. So they're going to be used against us. So all of the things that we've been watching for our whole lives about, you know, once we've been awake to this, about destabilization campaigns being used in foreign countries to affect elections, to regime change, people to just destroy, you know, fragment society, soften them up before an invasion. All of these tactics that the CIA has used on foreign governments, they've been turned on us recently, and they're all being used on us. So suppression of voices is nothing new in this, you know, for this tactic of how to control populations. It's just that we're now getting a up close and personal taste of it. Now, we've always been lied to by our mainstream media. We know the CIA is behind that. They've flat out been, you know, had to admit it back in the 70s during the Church Committee hearing that they were involved in the mainstream media, not just a little bit. They were fully in infiltrated in the mainstream media. So the CIA is at work here. They're also at work on the social media platforms as well. And so this is part of an agenda. The agenda is that we have a pandemic. Everybody's going to die unless we do X, Y, and Z. It is problem, reaction, solution. They cannot have people, doctors like Dr. Pitar or others, challenging the core component of this, which is problem. If these guys are coming out saying there is no problem, then that's a problem for their problem. You know what I mean? Like, so they have to silence anybody that is pointing holes or poking holes in this or pointing out that the numbers don't add up, the cases are being mismanaged, the tests are fraudulent, the people in charge, Fauci, are fraudulent, event 201 happened in advance, please explain that. You know, anybody that's pointing this out is a danger to the narrative. So they have to either be shut up or they have to be deleted, deplatformed. And of course, that's what we've been seeing. So this is what happens when you have a narrative that isn't very well crafted and it starts to fall apart. You panic because you know that your narrative is so flimsy and weak that all of these people can poke holes in it so easily. You have to either get a better lie or you have to get rid of these people exposing your lie. And they can't get a better lie. They just, they're not capable of figuring out a much better lie than what we've currently got. And there's, you know, half the population is going, bullshit, this is not as dangerous as you're making it out to be. Hospitals aren't full. People, we're not stacking bodies. None of this stuff that you scared us with, Anthony Fauci, like as Carrie Mullis described, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Of course he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. It's just he's not doing anything noble. He's lying about this because it's part of an agenda. So, you know, Dr. Carrie Mullis, if he were alive today, and I think he died, 2019, oh boy, you know, well, he'd be deplatformed, you know, for sure, of course, but
yeah, he'd be marginalized.
It's an information war. It's a battle of who's got the best information and who can get it out.
Yeah, like Dr. Judy Miscavige, who everyone is like, oh, she's a fraud. Well, she was the lead doctor on Discovering AIDS. So, the lead one.
Yeah. You can say what you want about her. She's not a fraud.
You know who's a better think tank? You know, you got the Davos crowd. You got other, you know, sort of high-level groups vying for power. You know, I was pretty optimistic about this whole, you know, Pope Francis, the Pope, he's coming together with corporate titans to make capitalism more fair and inclusive. Those are words I like. So this is Lady D. Rothschild talking about this arrangement.
So this morning, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism announcing a new partnership between the Pope, the Vatican, and business leaders across the globe. Joining us right now is the founder of that council, Lynn Forster de Rothschild. Lynn, good morning to you. You are the brainchild of this idea.
Well, the Vatican has asked for concrete actions to benefit all people. And in his encyclical in 2020, the Fratelli Tutti, he talked about reconciling the world of finance and the world of work. And that is what we are doing. Pope Francis doesn't point an accusatory finger at wealth creation and capitalism, but what he wants is for the creation of wealth to aid and not destroy the planet and the people on it.
Oh, what do you think about that? That makes a lot of
sense. I mean, are there two least trustworthy people on the planet than Lynn Forster de Rothschild and the Pope? I mean, she's a pathological psychopath, a pathological liar. She is not to be trusted. The Pope, you know, let's just remind people what the Pope was doing back in Argentina in the 70s, rounding people up. This is a dangerous guy. So let me get this straight, Lady Rothschild. You want the pedophile organization in charge of what's fair for the world in terms of capital allocation for businesses, the organization that's paid out $4 billion to settle child rape is going to be in charge of this? Was the Third Reich not available?
But sometimes the boys get out the castle and we need a chip in them to find them like a lost puppy. I mean, did I say that? What, capitalism has to be more fair.
The Rothschilds care about fairness. Everything about that is preposterous. It's probably coming from a television network that they own. Whatever, you know, there's some very easy rules to follow when it comes to stuff like this. You know, anything that the Pope is saying, let's do, or anything that the Rothschilds or Bill Gates or the World Economic Forum is saying, let's do, just you want to do the opposite. That's really it. You don't have to get too complicated in this. Whatever they're saying they want, you want the opposite. Simple.
Yeah, and I won't be a blockchain slave for you to speculate onto my labor. You know, we want labor to be more fair, so we're going to measure their heartbeat with the RFID chip so that we know exactly how much labor they produce for the banks. Did I say that out loud? Here's what I want to say.
Tell us at what point their useless life is over so that we can rip their hearts out at the top of a pyramid.
Yeah. Or I just press a button and then they explode. Goodbye. Thank you. Thank you for my labor that you've created with your sweats that I own. Thank you. I want to tell this to the bankers via rock and roll. I have a message for you, bankers. I'm watching you. Hear that, bankers?
Yep.
Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll move to a different country to avoid getting chipped. Maybe I'll move to the country of Haiti. You know, I was thinking about moving to Texas, but maybe I'll move to Haiti instead, you know, because I don't want to be microchipped. Maybe I have to move to a third world country. I was told, you know, I was on different job websites for Haiti, and I was told to send my resume to Laura Silsby. Do you think that's a good idea?
Jesus.
Who's Laura Silsby?
She's not in Haiti anymore. She's back in the States.
Oh, but she still runs some things there. Well, who is this person? Oh, I'm sorry. My phone's going off. It's a I got an Amber Alert. Sorry, Charlie. Oh boy, this is bad for the audio. Hold on, let me see if I could turn it. Okay, I just turned it off. I'm sorry, you were telling me who Laura Silsby is.
Yeah, oh yeah, Laura Silsby is this nice lady that used to work for the Clinton Global Initiative, who was busted in Haiti trying to smuggle out 33 children. And she was arrested. She was put in a Haitian prison for 6 months until Bill Clinton himself personally flew down there and got her out of God knows what sort of promises he made, got her out of this prison, took her back to the United States where she changed her last name and then took a job with the Amber Alert operation. So the person that was stealing kids from Haiti, she said they were orphans and didn't have mothers after the earthquake. No, they had families. They were looking for them.
Yeah,
they stole those kids because the Clintons are involved in a gigantic child trafficking network, which sounds fictional when that's the first time you hear it. But then you start to dig into who all their friends were and you realize that they are part of that. And they have, and there's a lot of money in that. There's a lot of money in kids. It's horrible, disgusting, obviously. But if we're going to be, you know, real about things, there's lots of money in organ trafficking. There's lots of money in kids. There's lots of money in drugs. There's lots of money in guns. And the Clintons are involved in all of that shit.
Well, wait.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, so he flew on a plane to Haiti. Oh, that was probably a long flight. It's not like he was on other islands in that area.
Right. If you look geographically where Little St. James is, you know, it's a short hop from Port-au-Prince. You know, maybe if you were loading kids up and flying them out somewhere, you know, you could probably do that through the islands, you know, like an island like Little St. James or something.
There used to be a phone number that you would call if you were in a cult. It was called the Cult Awareness Network. So if you're in a cult like, you know, Jonestown, before you drink the Kool-Aid, call this number, they'll fly in and save you. Well, they started getting calls from in the catacomb of Scientology to the level that Scientology bought the Cult Awareness Network. So now, when you call them, because you're in a cult that you can't escape, a Scientologist picks up. Now, this lady, Laura Silsby, she was involved in child trafficking, and now she does what? Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I got an Amber Alert. Oh, so there's a kid missing in the area. So Laura Silsby's on the case.
Yep, she's making sure that kid gets reunited, or not. You know, maybe with a family that really wants a child, like Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, maybe.
Ugh.
Apparently Epstein orchestrated his adoption of his kids.
Adoption, huh?
Mm-hmm. We'll see. That's according to Lynn Wood, so take that for what you will.
Yeah, I've been. Lynn Wood has been going off on Twitter. He's blocked now from Twitter. Trump is blocked now from Twitter.
Yeah.
What do you think is about to happen on? I think Monday, all hell's going to break loose because we just had the, January 6th happen. We had the election, but only Arizona via Ted Cruz stopped it. Or he contested it to a certain extent. What do you think's about to happen?
Oh, you know, trust the plan, everything's fine, right? I think
they're all getting arrested, huh?
I think that we're coming to a dark period where you've got half the, I don't know, maybe less than half, but you've got a large segment of the population that believes that Joe Biden won legitimately, though nobody showed up to his rallies, and he has he'll do a live stream that will get 4,000 people on it. And then you've got a large segment of the population that will never believe that Joe Biden won the election because, for some of those same reasons, he was incapable of speech and had no enthusiasm and looked like he was possibly dead and being reanimated in between appearances. So, you know, you have the makings of a divided country. I mean, it's been divided for a while now, but now the roles have been reversed a little bit, where you had the MAGA people that were in charge and they were talking about Trump and they were complaining about all these people trying to take him down. Now the roles are reversed. Now their guy was, in their mind, you know, cheated out of office. So now you have to deal with the MAGA people that are going to be mad at the Biden administration for the next 4 years. And we have all the hardcore leftists that are going to pretend that Joe Biden is a hero, even though he's a maniac. And it's going to be, and then you've got the media just chumming the water with blood, you know, trying to create these scenarios. Then you have the protest at the Capitol where they talk about these people as being, you know, coming to overthrow the government. You know, look, if you're coming to overthrow the government, you better come with more than just Viking outfits. You better come with, like, weapons and shit and do more than just sit in people's chairs. So you've got the makings for this to go on for a long, long time because the media is involved, and the media will manufacture this into something that it isn't. So I think that chaos is coming. I think that the MAGA people are never going to forget this. I think you got a problem moving forward with elections, you know? I mean, I've always, well, not always, but for the last 20 years, I've thought that this isn't, you know, once the Bush-Gore situation happened, and I didn't know all the details to it, but I did get the feeling, and I always had the feeling, that there was an arrangement that was made. So I don't know that elections mean anything. I think that elections can be, you know, can be manipulated. Well, frankly, I mean, you're voting for two candidates that heads they win, tails they win, so it doesn't matter who really wins, because the establishment always remains, and they, you know, these are their candidates. But I see darkness. You know, Berwick and I wrote this book called The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. You know, based on, you know, even without this, even because obviously the book came out before this Capitol situation. Even without it, there are so many problems and so many systemic weaknesses inside the America right now that this is just one component of it, social unrest. We also have financial, you know, fraud that is happening on a scale that is epic. We have the Federal Reserve printing our money into hyperinflation. We have the military. We've had a lot of problems besides the social component, but the social component is definitely going to be one of them, and the mainstream media will, as always, be co-conspirators in this. They don't want peace. People thinking that they're going to turn on their television to hear the media talk about how we need to de-escalate the situation, those people don't understand the role of the media. The role of the media is to escalate these things, to create chaos and tension and make people hate each other. If the media wanted to defuse the situation, they could. They don't want to. If it was up to the media, there'd be a school shooting every week. They love it. It's great for ratings. It's great for keeping people scared. And when people are scared, they'll do what they're told. When people aren't scared, they'll do whatever the fuck they want. And so there's a vested interest in keeping people terrified. And the media's role is to do that, to keep people divided and keep people scared. As long as they're divided and scared, they can't challenge the establishment. So this is, you know, I see more of this. I see more division. I see more fear, irrational fear, too, about, you know, stupid thing, murder hornets and super gonorrhea and shit like that. I mean, it's just, it's so preposterous and idiotic. But you also have to just remember that there's a portion of the public that goes, you know, to Home Depot and buys 17 cans of wasp spray when they hear that murder hornets are coming. You know what I mean? There's people that walk, that follow the arrows in supermarket aisles that say you have to go this direction down this aisle and the other direction down the other aisle. They do that. People follow that because there's tape on the floor with arrows, you know? So people are stupid. There are a lot of people that will do exactly what they're told.
But they've had
is my fear for this year.
They've had a lot of head-on collisions, though, when two morbidly obese people in the Walmart scooters with the cart on top. Do you know when two 500-pound people are going 10 miles an hour and they have a head-on collision, it's almost like the starting of a tsunami or an earthquake. You know, I don't know if you've seen that live. So, you know, the tape on the floor does prevent some of that for safety.
I put in my octopus book that we went from a country, I forget exactly how I phrased it, but it was something along the lines of we went from a country of, like, big dreamers with, you know, great ideas to a bunch of people that are busy circumnavigating their local Walmart on a little rascal scooter with compression socks and an oxygen tank, and they're thinking that they're Magellan somehow, you know?
Just navigating the open waters of the concrete jungle.
Walmart on your boat, the SS Little Rascal.
Oh, that's the freedom I enjoy. I live in America, goddammit. I want a three-car garage and a wife with big tits. I want to ask you about this. All right. We know that the establishment and the banks and the military, they want full spectrum dominance over our life. That's why they want to chip us. That's their intention. Well, what if someone dies? Like, what if a politician dies? Are they just gonna announce that, you know, since Kennedy, or are they just gonna replace them? So I had the former Asia-Pacific bureau chief of Forbes magazine, Mr. Benjamin Fulford, on my podcast recently, and he started talking about some clones. I want to play this clip here.
It was obviously a case of identity theft. And I've since, you know, tried to get anyone to confirm that Neil Keenan's around. For example, someone in the CIA who's completely fluent in Indonesia, has been there 20 years, and there's no record of him visiting Indonesia. So these people, they not only do they kill people, they then steal their identities. The same thing happened to Jane Burgermeister, who exposed that they were putting bird flu in vaccines and started court cases. She was killed, and her colleagues came and said that she was killed. And then someone popped up assuming her identity and saying totally different things. That's why I want people to watch carefully Donald Trump to make sure it's still the real man and they haven't replaced him with somebody who suddenly says, oh yeah, actually Joe Biden won and we're just going to have to roll over. That can create people on computer screens that look as real as possible, and only slightly alter what they say just to insert the little bit of disinfo they need us to swallow.
What do you think about that? Does the name Jane Burgermeister ring any bells for you?
No, but I don't doubt this at all. I mean, with deepfake technology right now, you can make it. Just the technology that we've seen, you know, the commercial grade technology. There's the ability you can make anybody. I've seen this where they have, you know, side by side pictures of a person, and one guy's doing this screen capture where he's talking, and then the picture on the other side is saying the same words, and its mouth is moving. And in the image that they used in this one video demonstration that I saw, they used the face that they used was Putin's. You know, but they could make Putin say anything that they wanted him to say, just because this other guy was saying it. So we have to acknowledge that technology is there, and may be used against us. We have to recognize that the Smith Modernization Act of 2012 legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used on Americans by the American government and media. So they can lie to us without it being illegal.
That's
and
good.
They do lie to us all That's the time about all kinds of things. But what we've seen them doctor videos, we've seen them, you know, there's questions about the beheading videos, you know, the ISIS beheading videos and stuff like that, that they look a little staged and phony or green screened or whatever. And, you know, so this has been happening for a while. There's nothing new about this, except that the technology is so great now, just what we know, that how would we even know? I mean, really, where would we know? We see people get, we see body doubles for world leaders. I mean, how many Saddam Hussein body doubles were hung or shot? You know, I mean,
yeah,
maybe all of them. I don't know.
And now we only see people from Zoom. So, you know, the government could kill your grandma and then make a deep fake. And then you wouldn't know she was dead for 10 years if they wanted to, because you're not authorized to go in that building because you're the only, your labor camp is building 5. You can't see grandma. Right. We'll show her to you on a Zoom. But there's a deeper level that I want to just get to. There's a deeper level than deepfake video technology. There's in-person clones, and I want to play Ben Fulford saying this. Is that true?
You know, I've been hearing about these masks for more than a decade now, and but I wonder, why is it then that we're still seeing, you know, people like Nancy Pelosi and Mark Zuckerberg out there in public? And my answer seems to be that they replace these people, you know, with lookalikes and with computer graphics. And so it's like a whack-a-mole situation. You arrest Nancy Pelosi, and then another one appears on TV the next day, you know. And I know this, I actually talked to an assassin working for the Asian Secret Society, who said that he personally killed his, what he called, Jewish handler. And a week later, the same guy shows up again.
Mm.
So they're, I don't know what to make of this, but if you look at Joe Biden, for example, if you look at pictures from 20 years ago and from recently, you see, look at the earlobes. You can see that there's at least 2 Joe Bidens up there.
So where do you think that technology's at, Charlie Robinson?
Well, let me first say that I have no inside information or any knowledge of this. This is just purely speculation on my part. But look, I've been hearing this stuff for years. There are questions about some of these people. The deeper problem is that we just don't know what technology is being hidden from us. Does the idea of cloning people sound crazy? Of course it sounds crazy. It sounds preposterous. But I know a lot of things that sound crazy that are real. So it's hard to know what's truth, what's fiction, what's speculation, what's possible, what's impossible. Something like cloning, you know, I've heard the Donald Marshall stories and thing, you know, where he's talking about this whole thing, you know, how he was told to dance and they liked it. Look, and I can't verify any of that. That it sounds like somebody that's schizophrenic. But what if there, I mean, you know, what if this technology exists? If it does exist, like Ben said, you just put somebody out there, you take somebody off the street, replace them with it. I mean, look, we got questions about Mark Zuckerberg. He's looking more and more robotic day by day, let's be honest here. So he's not doing himself any favors by looking like a fucking android to begin with, but in evolving into a bigger one as he gets a little bit older, or whatever, the new Mark Zuckerberg version 2.0 comes out, or whatever this is. But we have to acknowledge that we are up against people that would not hesitate to do something like this. If they had the technology available to them, would they have a moral hesitation to roll this out? The answer is no, they would not. They would push this to the limits because nobody would be expecting it. So I'm probably going to need to see some of these clones, you know, short circuit on live TV before I fully believe it, or short circuit live in front of me, I think, before I would fully believe it. But we've seen some weird stuff happen. We've seen some, you know, celebrities hit the deck, you know, like they had the off button pushed, you know, to go down. So
there's a video of Hillary being put in a van and she seems to short circuit.
It's in the intro to my podcast, Macroaggression, the video version.
Oh, yeah,
of it. Yeah. I've got that clip in there of her like getting dragged into a van like a sack of potatoes thrown in there. I mean,
like, quick, get her some adrenochrome. Are there any kids in the area?
Yeah, we're gonna have to drain a kid and maybe plug her into. Does anyone have like a USB charger? We're gonna have to charge her up because she's out of juice
and a centrifuge for all the blood. you know, where do we get this technology? Where do we get this technology? You know, Project Paperclip brought a bunch of German Nazi scientists in. They weren't into genetic perfection at all. They didn't really like a perfect blood of an Aryan. Oh, that is all they thought about.
Yep.
There was a movie called The Boys from Brazil in the 70s that came out that depicts these Project Paperclip Nazi scientists escaping World War II and then cloning little orphan children from Brazil. It's called The Boys from Brazil. It came out in 1970. Now, how did Hollywood know about that? Oh, because the Nazis came over and started NASA. Wernher von Braun started NASA, a Nazi. So they went right to the top of why. They had contracts with aliens, maybe, I'm speculating. Well, one crazy person on the internet said all this stuff. His name is Phil Schneider, and this is what he said.
Kept totally out of the public view, off the surface, I'm sure the underground bases, without question, are being used as form a place to house alien takeover. Alien takeover means the implementation of a one-world government, direct opposite of constitutional law, direct opposite of freedom of choice.
Are we seeing anything that he's saying?
I mean, he allegedly knew a little bit of something that was going on underground.
Yeah, he built underground bases. He was a geologist who describes these massive nuclear-powered drills that would create these underground bases, you know, for, you know, storage of perpetrators of a nuclear war so that they could escape the consequences of what they've just started. You know, those kinds of nuclear bases, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the technology he was running was a type of, like, maybe it was a laser. It was clearing out these tunnels and classifying them on the edges, they were drilling a hole through, but as they were drilling the hole through, it was baking the outsides of these tunnels so that it was hardening them so that they didn't have to add additional support. There's lots of evidence that says that there are tunnels that go all the way from coast to coast under the United States that connect Air Force base or, you know, bases, you know, to one another. I don't even think that's debatable anymore. I think that's fairly well known. I've seen videos from inside of them. I know you probably have, or a lot of people have. So, you know, the idea of underground bases. Yeah, I mean, we have been doing that for a long, long time. That's no secret. Underground tunnels that connect from city to city. Well, that might be a little bit more secret, but still. Plenty of people have been talking about that for decades now. So I think that's well established. I live in Denver, you know, there's the Denver airport and NORAD and all these things here, all these continuity of government locations here in Denver or Colorado Springs. And they talk about, you know, their ability to connect to Washington, D.C. underground. So we've heard about that as well. So, and Phil Schneider was the guy that was running that program, or at least heavily involved in that program. Now he gets off into some really, you know, far out conversations about what's down there underground, but beneath these bases that is not human. So that's where you get into the, you know, areas where people can be, you know, we can debate that. But the underground base component and all that is undeniable.
And he was murdered, you know, he was murdered. Yep. So I tend to listen to people that get murdered, like Bill Cooper, like, 2 days after 9/11, he goes, this is a false flag. Then people show up and shoot him. Phil Schneider was strangled to death with his oxygen cord. So when he, you know, is like, I'm breaking my security clearance anyway. This is what the aliens are all about. And then he's murdered. I listen to that guy. You know what I mean? So, sorry.
Danny Casolaro.
Yeah.
Gary Webb. All these guys. Right. Yeah. When you're writing books or writing stories or telling things or doing radio shows like Bill Cooper was, you know, saying in advance, 3 months in advance of 9/11, there's going to be an attack. It's going to happen. It's going to be blamed on Osama bin Laden. Don't you believe it for a second. And then, you know, after 9/11 happens, Bill Cooper winds up getting shot by a cop. Yeah, there's a problem.
Yeah. So anyway, Phil Schneider, the word is deflagrate. I just looked it up. So deflagrate the rock with a nuclear sort of heated drill. It gets to molten, steel temperatures, and then just goes around and cuts the rock and deflagrates it, turns it into glass on the outside. I know this because I have this book called The Dulce Wars. I'm obsessed with it. I think I texted you a picture. It's called The Dulce Wars, Underground Alien Bases and the Battle for Planet Earth. You want to know where Eric Hollaback gets his fucking news from? It's not the fucking CNN. I go to this old book called The Dulce Wars, the Underground Alien Bases and the Battle for Planet Earth, because I want to know the real shit. And I,
yeah, man.
And, Tom, so I'm going to read from this book right now. Thomas Costello was transferred to Dulce Base and received clearance Ultra 7. Among the experiments at this base were human brain recognition, acquisition, and transfer, matter manipulation, human alien embryonic cloning, rapid human body replacing by use of energy/matter transfer, complete with an individual's memory from computer banks. Quote. So, is this what they're doing? If you replace them, if you murder them for treason because they stole an election, imagine that. You just have this military tribunal. You prove someone stole an election from fraud. You murder them at Gitmo by firing squad. You go back to Washington, D.C., and they walk in the room of the Capitol building. You're like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? You
throw your hands up and go, we've got problems.
Yeah.
When we kill these cockroaches, they come back.
I should have listened to Phil Schneider. I should have got the book, The Dulce Wars.
Right.
Phil
Schneider, we should make t-shirts. Phil Schneider was right.
I thank you for going along with me on this,
I love that stuff, man. As crazy as Phil Schneider's story sounds, he's got some aspects of it that are definitely true, and like you said, he was murdered. That tends to, really hamper your ability to write follow-up books, but it also bolsters your credibility as well, because if somebody thought that you were so dangerous that you needed to be murdered to shut you up, then maybe some of the things that you were talking about have to be given a second look. It's not to say that everything Phil Schneider said was 100% true, but if they thought that he needed to be removed from this planet because he was talking too much, well, then what was he talking about? And let's dig into that. So I think it's a reasonable thing to check out what these people were writing about that was so sensitive and dangerous to the establishment that they felt that they had to be murdered.
Yeah, and he was killed like 20 years ago, like around 99 or so.
Yeah.
So I want to talk, we talked a little bit about this. I want to talk about the election. The Congress may have just ratified the ballots for Joe Biden, but one senator stood and co-signed the voter fraud. I want to play this clip here.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Arizona that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic?
Mr. Vice President, I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Aww. So, that's just 11 electoral votes. So, Arizona was the only one that pushed back, but but Pennsylvania, all the other swing states were ratified in Congress for Joe Biden.
I just don't think Joe Biden won. I don't think, I mean, he may become legally be the president. Nobody will ever be able to convince me that he got more votes than Barack Obama did, who was filling stadiums and had all that enthusiasm. And look, I get it. It's not a scientific, you know, my statement is not anchored in science. It's anchored in my eyeball test, like a lot of people that saw what was happening over the last year or so, saw thousands and thousands of people showing up for Donald Trump. And Joe Biden, when he showed up, which was rarely, couldn't get a dozen people there. It just doesn't make sense to me. I understand there's a huge segment of the population that voted for Biden, not because they were enthusiastic about him, but because he wasn't Trump. And so if they weren't enthusiastic about him, they wouldn't show up to his rally. I get that.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about Joe Biden got 40,000 people and Trump was getting 60,000 people. I'm talking about Joe Biden got 10 people and Donald Trump was getting 60,000 people. There was a huge, massive difference.
Yeah.
And there's motive for the Democratic Party to steal this. They were getting their teeth kicked in. They were realizing that Donald Trump was extremely disruptive to them. And just to clarify, I'm not a Donald Trump fan. I'm not a supporter. I never voted for him. I don't vote for these people. So I'm not on the Trump team. To say that I think, you know, Biden stole it, some people would make the assumption that by default I must be for Trump. I'm not for either of these people. I'm trying to be as objective about this as I can. I'm looking at this saying, no way. Just no way. There weren't enough people that wanted Joe Biden to win. There were a lot. Now, I get it. One vote, one person, right? You know, you don't. An enthusiastic Trump supporter doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that person's going to get, their vote's going to count as much as an unenthusiastic Biden supporter. I get that. But Joe Biden didn't get 20-mile-long stretches of cars with flags hanging out saying Biden. Trump did. Joe Biden didn't do 3 states in a day, you know, campaigning and going, showing up at, you know, 75,000 people venues to overflowing. Trump did. Joe Biden didn't do any of that. Joe Biden hid for the last 2 weeks of the candidacy, trying to suppress the information about his shitbag son. You know, if you just take a look at it objectively and look at, like, the enthusiasm, I'm sorry, man. I just can never come to any sort of belief that Joe Biden got 80 million votes. Dude, I can't. If you told me Joe Biden got 40 million votes, I'd have a hard time believing you. But 80 million? No way. I'm sorry. I will never, ever, ever believe that.
Yeah, I want to play Ted Cruz's speech here after he signs his contestation.
Okay.
I want to speak to the Republicans who are considering voting against these objections. I understand your concerns, but I urge you to pause and think. What does it say to the nearly half the country that believes this election was rigged if we vote not even to consider the claims of illegality and fraud in this election? And I believe there's a better way. The leaders just spoke about setting aside the election. Let me be clear. I am not arguing for setting aside the result of this election. All of us are faced with two choices, both of which are lousy. One choice is vote against the objection. And tens of millions of Americans will see a vote against the objection as a statement that voter fraud doesn't matter, isn't real, and shouldn't be taken seriously.
So, what do you think? I mean, he's kind of standing up saying, look, if we don't even address this issue, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm no fan of Ted Cruz. I hate being on his side for this, but it's like you know, you come from that world of advertising, and it's like you just see when a social zeitgeist is catching on, like vitamin water, like just something as simple as vitamin water. I saw, wow, that's a market, like Gatorade. If you look at the nutrition facts, it doesn't have any vitamin. I want to be hydrated and get some vitamins. Boom, vitamin water hit the shelves, and all of a sudden you see everyone walking around with it, and you're like, oh, that's taken off. I could just see on the street, you know? People are filling their Walmart carts with it, you know? And I didn't see the same enthusiasm for Creepy Joe.
No.
And,
you know, this whole thing... If you're a single African-American mother who wants to put your son in a better school, so you lie on your registration and say that you live somewhere, you live at your sister's house instead of your actual house so that your son can go to this better school, the full weight of the American legal system will be brought down upon your head, and has. There's a lady that has been, that did 6 months in jail for this very thing.
And you're supposed to go to the poor election. You're supposed to go to the poor school.
You steal the election, and everyone is saying, let's stop living in the past. Let's put this behind us and focus on the future, right? The time for this is so divisive. Let's move on from this.
Yeah.
The utter hypocrisy of the American government knows no bounds. You know, that this is all just a gigantic inconvenience, that we examine the very real problems with the voting in this election. We can't do that, Eric. That would be to live in the past. We need to heal from this. We need to come together and accept these results. Listen, don't challenge that. That's un-American of you. How dare you? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to destroy this great country? I mean, I want to scream, you know? I want to scream at how insane this is.
So Ted Cruz...
God forbid you jaywalk. The fucking police will be relentless with you. But you steal election and everyone starts looking the other way. Too big, we can't be bogged down with this. It's just, it's so infuriating.
You know, and it's not just Republicans I champion who point out this stuff. It's also Liz Warren in 2016, the Democratic primary. What did she say?
We're learning today that a new book that is coming out by Donna Brazile, the former acting chair of the Democratic National Committee, that the campaign of Secretary Hillary Clinton was far more influential at the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, than we previously knew. Do you think, though, that what we're learning from Donna Brazile's book suggests that the campaign, that what the Democratic National Committee did, meant this election was rigged?
I think it was.
There's Liz Warren going, 2016, Democratic primary, rigged.
Yeah, it was.
No, we don't, but we're going to ratify these electoral colleges today and get it right through. Joe Biden won. Nothing to see here. He was so popular. He's such a good talker. He's such, like, when he goes up and makes speeches, Joe Biden, people go crazy, you know, because he's not a lunatic. He's a very good speaker.
And by the way, you know, I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down. So it was trained, and then watch the hair come back up again. They look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
But I want to give a follow-up story. So that kid actually was not supposed to be in that school's pool. So the parents were arrested after they touched Joe Biden's leg hair. It was a mistake, you know, but what he said there is great, right? And a lot of people voted for him, right?
Well, Corn Pop did. And the Corn Pop constituent, they voted. They're heavy Biden fans. Yeah, it is political theater. It is designed to make smart people frustrated and throw their hands up and say, "I'm not participating in this anymore." It's designed to make dumb people feel like they are doing something, which they're not. And it's designed to make everybody else feel like there's some sort of outcome to an election that has very big problems with it. Once again, I'm not saying this because I want Donald Trump to be the president. I just want the people that are stealing elections to be outed and have their clones hung. So that's all I'm asking for. Is that too much?
Yeah. I mean, isn't that just terrifying? Like, how deep does this go? This sort of material makes me so paranoid, but, like, what if, you know, like, you get a beautiful wife, you live in a beautiful house, everything's great, right? You know? Then she's like, I'm going to stay at my sister's, right? You're like, okay, bye, sweetie, you know? Then the feds catch her, kill her. Then, you know, she's just replaced by a clone just to feed you that little piece of disinformation. Oh, you should take that job, you know, at NSA. What? Oh, so you're just led down a trail? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Reptilian housewives. The real reptilian housewives of Washington, D.C. I can't wait for that episode, that series.
Did Trump concede? It sounded like he conceded. The word concede is in the Constitution. It's a legal term, concede. You have to concede the election, then you fold, and then the next guy comes in. Concede. Trump, did he concede? I didn't hear him use that word. Let's listen to Trump maybe conceding.
My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results. My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy. I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws to verify the identity and eligibility of all voters and to ensure faith and confidence in all future elections. Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. To the citizens of our country, serving as your president has been the honor of my lifetime. And to all of my wonderful supporters, I know you are disappointed, but I also want you to know that our incredible journey is only just beginning.
He says it has been the honor of my life. He also said, you might be disappointed. He also said, we're going to get a smooth transition to the new administration. Is that Trump 2.0? He didn't say the word concede.
He's starting his own country. And this is the first step in that.
Do you think that there's...
It's going to be a MAGA flag, but it's not going to be America. It's going to be... some version of it. I don't know. I don't know what these guys have planned. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes here. I don't trust any of them. You know? I don't know what he's saying. Like you said, he's talking about his presidency in the past tense, and then he's saying this is just the beginning. So is it the beginning or the end? Or is it the end of the beginning? Or is it the beginning of the... I'm confused. I don't know. It's, you know, it depends on who you are is how you're going to take this message. If you're on the left, you're going to be like, yeah, he just conceded. He's done. He's talking about it in the past tense. If you're on the hardcore right, you're like, this is 15-dimensional chess. He's thinking, you know, four steps ahead, and he's still working with the military, and Flynn's got his back, and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, maybe the simplest answer is that Donald Trump is tired of dealing with all this stuff. And who could blame him, frankly? Like I said, I'm no supporter of his. And he's done plenty of things to make people hate him. But he's also had the media manufacture a lot of things about him that he didn't do. Or take words out of context or print headlines that then contradict themselves when you read the body of the story. And things like that. The media has been so dishonest with him, which is really, you know, which I'm not surprised about, to be clear, but they didn't need to be, because he gave them enough ammunition of legitimate and real things that they could hang him out to dry with. But they you know, obviously attacked him with those, but then they took it a step further and just made things up about him. So, you know, or they would say, oh, you know, here he is putting kids in cages and everything, but never acknowledging that Obama was the one that built those facilities, things like that, you know. So it's like the media is like, it's true, but it's not the full story. And they did that to Trump for 4 years. If this guy wants to leave, who could blame him? Yeah. You know, if I had all that money and access to this and the final years of my life, what, God, why would you take this job? I know why he takes the job, because he's a narcissistic sociopath who is drawn to things like this, like a moth to a light, you know, power and fame and people kissing your ass. And those are the things that Donald Trump likes. I get that he would like that. But all the and you can get that running Trump administration, right? You could, or running Trump Enterprises, the private component, not just being president. Being president comes with so much negativity as well. That's why those guys go in looking one way and come out looking like skeletons. You know, they're just, you know, maybe they've been replaced for all I know. Who knows? But Trump's, you know, his concession speech was ambiguous. You know, like you said, it left the door open.
Yeah.
And maybe that's by design. I don't know.
What if they tried to clone him, right? And so when they were waking him up from an incubation, you know, a floor-to-ceiling illuminated incubation tank, right? And they wake him up, like the first scene in the first Austin Powers movie, you know, they wake him up, and then they hold up a picture of Rosie O'Donnell, and he's like, she's a fat loser. And they're like, okay, he's perfect. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then when they're like, okay, this is your time to concede, he's so stubborn that he's like, you know what? Fuck you, Nancy Pelosi, loser. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? We cloned him, but we forgot. It's hard to reprogram him. He's so stubborn.
Yeah.
So,
well, they'll just make his head explode at some point. There's got to be a chip in there, like a,
oh my,
you
know, God,
detonation device.
So here's what I predict is coming up, because they're already signaling they're trying to do that. They tried to impeach him once for the fake Russia gate thing. Which, you know, they said Russia, Russia, Russia for the first 2 years, turned out all bullshit. They tried to hang him out for that, but now they're going to go, we have to get him out of there because he's dangerous. He's inciting violence. They stormed the Capitol, you know. QAnon stormed the Capitol, so now we have to impeach him for that. 1, 2, 3, and vote. So
yeah,
that's just, well, so to kind of block him from having 10 more days to look into voter fraud.
Well, I also see this as the setup for, you know, problem, reaction, solution, problem. Domestic terrorists have stormed the Capitol. Reaction: we're all going to die if we don't care. You know, there's going to be a hostile takeover. You know, solution: in implementation of a domestic terrorist task force that goes around rooting out and finding these new domestic like a new Patriot Act, but for domestic terrorists instead. I know that there's components of it that already tackle domestic terrorism, but think of it like, you know, like instead of the military rounding up Al-Qaeda on foreign soil, the military or some section of the military rounding up terrorists on our soil. And a domestic terrorist, if they give you that designation according to the Patriot Act, they can indefinitely detain you. So they now, you know, they have the right in the law to slap that label on you and detain you against your will without an attorney. Because you're a terrorist. They don't have to tell where you are. So they can take you to Guantanamo Bay. So it starts this process of, if Joe Biden's administration decides that they have a problem with domestic terrorism, then they can just start labeling people that are inconvenient to them as domestic terrorists and disappear them. The laws allow for that. So
is this podcast evidence in a secret domestic terrorist group? Like, are we implicating ourselves as domestic terrorists? Because we don't go, look, listen, Klaus Schwab, I will join you. You know, I'll be your PR guy in the background. Ready? Here's your speech. Yeah. I own everything. The car in your driveway. The wedding ring on your finger. Like, I'll write your creepy things that you say. You know, I'll join you. You know, hire me. You don't have to murder me.
Right.
But Charlie Robinson, you should get rid of him because he's, you know, a conspiracy theorist. And
yes. I'll be in the FEMA camp making turning big rocks into small rocks with my sledgehammer all day.
Sorry, Charlie, but if it's between me and you, you know,
you gotta go.
It's a cruel world. Klaus Schwab, hire me. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, I got my resume to Laura Silsby has my resume. Check your emails, Laura Silsby. Oh, my.
I'll be a reference for Eric. He's a hard worker. He's a good guy. He'll do what needs to be done in the salt mines for you, Laura.
Oh, no, don't sell me. Oh, my God. All right, well, the book is The Octopus of Global Control. The other one is The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. The guest is Charlie Robinson. The email is, the website is www.theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. The podcast is Macroaggressions. Am I missing one?
No. Union of the Unwanted is our group podcast that we've been doing, too.
Nice. You could go to erichollerbach.com. You can click on the stand-up specials there. Watch my 3 dirty stand-up specials for free. Conspiracies and Dick Jokes, Fart Porn and Beer Hall, and It's a Medical Device. Also, if you click on the screenwriting tab, you might find a screenplay there called Dulcy. Interesting. I wonder what that's about. Anyway, it's a pleasure to know you, Charlie Robinson. This is the second time we talked, and it's just like, you know, I could talk to you all day. We're very on the same page.
I know. It's we find a way to make the problems in the world not seem so scary by laughing at them, you know? But of course, I don't think that makes them go away. It just makes it easier for us to process and deal with it. So I appreciate and enjoy the blending of comedy with these conspiratorial type of topics, because they already sound crazy, but when you add the comedy component to it, it makes it sound fun crazy. And then at least you're getting it in a way that doesn't, you know, you don't have your guard up. You're laughing at the insanity of it all. And then you might also take the additional step of then checking some of this stuff out and realizing, hey, it is fun, crazy, and it's also true. and then yeah. You can, you know, so it's a good way to sort of ease people into this world. I think, obviously, Sam Tripoli has done a great job with it. I like the way you do it. I like the way you present these, these very real and serious and dark topics in a way that is, a little bit, you know, it's fun. Fun with Klaus Schwab is what I'm getting at. I'm sure that your new screenplay, Klaus and Me, will be a big hit. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, thanks. I'm a fan of Sam Tripoli too, you know, and I'm a fan of a lot of people. We're all trying to just do the Lord's work. You know, I sent my family the movie Vaxxed. I'm just trying to get them to watch it, and they just like have such an aversion to the information, you know. So I try to always kind of come at it like, you know, well, this is what it is, but I can't really explain it unless I put it in like a silly sketch, you know. That's just that's the only way I can, you know. J.P. Sears is another guy. Is another guy who's really funny, and he can explain things in a good way. So yeah, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. But
you're doing it, and I appreciate you having me on. I enjoy our chats and our texts.
Okay, thanks a lot, Charlie Robinson. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Bye bye.
Bye.
There he goes, Charlie Robinson. This is episode Highway Diary 284. Bye, everybody.